This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, the morning run continues. Julian Ng, Tan Chung Han, and myself with the top business stories of the day. We start with Bank Negara. Sorry, did I sound too upbeat? Yeah. Well, you know.
Sounds like a commercial for Bank Negara.
For fund managers, it might be a story that warms the cockles of their hearts. Bank Negara is easing hedging rules.
Yes, I think Bank Negara is fighting a battle on a few fronts. One is the NDF market, which they had successfully shut down because they worried about this unfettered trading of the ringgit in the offshore markets. And now, because they have shut down one avenue and one option, they're opening up slowly the kind of options that exist domestically. So they're allowing fund managers to hedge more. They're allowing importers, exporters to hedge more. They're adding more currencies to the whole mix. And also that enforce 75% repatriation of export proceeds. That still stays. And Bank Negara is also going to allow short selling to be expanded to domestic entities when it was only open to foreign entities before. So it looks like Bank Negara wants to enable companies to do their business well. And apparently, you can only do your business well if you're able to forecast ringgit movements and you're able to hedge for certain certainties about the ringgit and how that affects your business.
Now, at the same time, when I look at this kind of news flow, it brings to mind some recent comments that we heard on the Ringgit and Sense show. A regular contributor on our Ringgit and Sense show, independent forex strategist, Dr. Suresh Ramanathan.
You mean the S&M with the whips?
Oh, is it S&M or
yes.
Ringgit and Sense? Oh, sorry, yes, S&M.
Ringgit and Sense is a different
I think we need to sound
show.
The whip, actually.
Yeah, no, yeah. Can't you tell I'm the newbie here? Management is going to be all up in my case. All right, so yes, S&M show.
They're going to ban you like how Bank Negara banned the NDF.
Oh, all right. where was I? Yeah, so now he was talking about how these measures may actually invite the kind of volatility that we see in offshore markets into the domestic side. So now, while on one hand, it does free up fund managers, domestic fund managers, to hedge more of their assets under management. Also, with those traders or those who are investing in Malaysian bonds, being able to short sell them. But at the same time, I wonder if those concerns will be felt among the investing community, whether it'll just invite more volatility.
It's not just the investing community, but also the businesses as well, right? Importers, exporters, they also need to hedge. And the problem with this hedging instruments is that it's a double-edged sword. A lot of people can use that for actual hedging work, but you can purely go into the buying and selling of those instruments, and that turns into speculation. And if there's too much speculation, it can be quite destabilizing for the country as well. But zero hedging options are also bad for businesses because it will take the planning tools that they require out of the whole equation, and this would not be good for businesses and even result in losses.
But, I remember this distinction being made between genuine exporters and then, of course, the kind of pure speculators. But is that, when you look at the markets, aren't markets kind of agnostic about these distinctions? Don't they see them all in the same, as it were, plane? Because it's just part of the nature of, current financial architecture. It's just that you can do these things. It doesn't make it necessarily bad. I mean, we use the word speculator as if it was a bad word.
Well, you're really trying to assess how big your playground is going to be. So if you give the impression that your playground is very big and people start playing in it and suddenly you reduce the perimeters of the playground, people would vote with their feet, or in this case, foreign investors have voted with their money. They sold a huge chunk of government bonds, and without the participation of foreign investors in government bonds, it's akin to raising the cost of borrowing for the Malaysian government or Malaysian corporations because there's not enough participation in that particular bond market. So Bank Negara has a tough job right now to both ensure a certain level of the ringgit. I think they're getting very alarmed about where the ringgit had gone to. Plus, at the same time, they don't want to stifle how people do business.
But at the same time, you've got comments here from some portfolio managers saying that the ringgit may be back on their radar, and although they have revised their outlook for the ringgit against the dollar down by a few cents.
So. Might be cold comfort because the previous, and this is a Bloomberg survey, 455 was the target before, and now they're coming back down to 440. 6. So, yay.
It's not down enough.
Scant consolation right there.
Okay,
man.
So moving to a story that perhaps affects all of us because we contribute to SOC. So today, Dato' Mohamed Azman Aziz Mohamed, SOCSO CEO, has defended the newly proposed employment insurance scheme. Dato' Mohamed pointed out that the potential benefits of the scheme will help up to 300,000 workers as beneficiaries. The cabinet last month approved the EIS to be implemented by January 2018.
Yeah, SOCSO says that the retrenchment figures over the last 10, 20 years, and I suppose this is a back-of-envelope calculation, it's about 30,000 to 40,000 per year. As many as 300,000 people are going to benefit from this. And I guess this is a continuing quarrel between the employers, who obviously don't want extra costs to their business, and the government, who is trying to, I guess, establish some kind of social safety net, which doesn't exist in Malaysia, apart from the, you know, meager attempts made under BRIM. And I don't know, is there anything else apart from BRIM?
Oh, well, no. But the whole range of government subsidies, I guess, that add to or ease the burden on your wallet for the ordinary man. But yes, you're right. I mean, cash handouts through BIM have been an explicit measure to deal with rising costs.
Well, no, I wouldn't really call them meager, no, because I would think that this is substantial here, because it goes a long ways towards alleviating the finances of the B40 there, putting more cash into their pockets, right? Now, but at the same time, fine, 30 to 40,000 per year over 10, 20 years, that's fine. But also, you got to keep in mind, how quick was the turnaround for those 30, 40,000 per year in getting back into full employment, right? Because as it stands, according to the latest data, our employment market is pretty tight. Unemployment is about 3.5%. You look at the states, they are, saying 4 or 5%, and they're already considering that full employment. Now, granted, it's a whole different market. So we are at 3.5%, pretty tight labor market. So I wonder if this is really necessary. But Julian, you also raised a really, really good point, about the cost of business. Now, I understand that the number being bandied about is about a quarter of a percentage point. Sure, that may seem somewhat low. If you're a SME, you've got, let's say your payroll a month is, $100,000. But let's say you go up into the bigger numbers, let's say your payroll is in the millions per month, then, that quarter of a percent really translates to quite a bit, and that could come at the expense of jobs. In other words, to put it simply, perhaps this cost, this EIS, also could come at the cost of these big companies hiring more people.
Oh, well, I'm sure that the people who are masterminding this project will be clever enough to filter it. And I don't think that the million-dollar people don't really need a kind of insurance because they have established their own self-insurance. But
I mean companies who have payrolls that are in the millions per month. Yeah.
Oh, right. I see. Right. Okay. Yeah.
So you think that added cost...
As opposed to your payroll there, Julian. I'm kidding.
Well, you're talking about a few percentage points, a few basis points of rise in the overall payroll. But is this also a way for the government to shift some of this cost to the private sector? Because you either, if you wanted to start a social safety net, either raise taxes or you become more targeted into projects like this, right? And I think the Malaysian government is also thinking of other ways to think about the happiness of the nation. For example, we are a nation with a very high income inequality. We have retirement insufficiency as reflected to statements by all our august institutions. We don't have enough for our retirement. We don't have enough money to buy our own property. So it's a long game. It's a very, very long game. And the question is, where do we start? Whether this EIS is the start of that establishment of social safety nets?
Moving on to the news that Malaysia, the government rather, is mulling the enforcement of a cap on foreign insurers' ownership.
Yeah, currently insurance companies are allowed to own to the extent of 100% foreign-owned for their local operations. And a few handful of insurance companies that would be in technical violation if this plan comes through would be the likes of AIA, Great Eastern, and even Tokio Marine. But Bank Negara is really adamant about, I think, raising the insurance coverage for Malaysians. Bank Negara also wants to make insurance policies a lot cheaper. And so they're devising ways as to how consumers can buy their insurance directly rather than go through very expensive distribution systems like the agents. Of course, knowledge of insurance policy is to be counterbalanced by that. And I'm just wondering if this rule comes through, assuming that foreign insurance companies are more efficient, whether the need to have higher local participation would raise prices of insurance policies.
Yeah, no, well, I mean, that's a good point, because at the end of the day, you know, I would think that when it comes to insurance, bigger is better, right? In the sense that, you know, when it comes time for you to claim, you know, your payouts, you want to make sure that your insurance provider is still there standing. And, you know, that being the global, like the big boys. If you recall from our chat with Zurich Malaysia on the Breakfast Grill recently, and you can download it on the podcast, you know, talking about how Malaysia plays, you know, a smaller role compared to Indonesia, China, India, right? So they have a global strategy going on. And when you look at their global footprint, there is diversification of risks as well. So I wonder if the local boys can stand up to the big boys.
Okay, the news is coming up shortly, and we'll have the opening numbers on the stock market and more analysis. You're listening to The Morning Run on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.